topic that you really cover quite a lot in your work. And this has to do with the idea, does the brain make consciousness? Let's talk about the brain and how it forms or does not form consciousness. What is the brain?
What is the brain? It is discussed often as being the most complex form of matter in the universe, which may very well be the case. In our culture, our general materialist culture, the implication is that the brain, the material substance of the brain, through its electrical activity, its chemical activity, its biological properties, gives rise to mind, gives rise to my sense of myself, gives rise to your sense of who you are. And that's the materialist perspective. And I was fine with that. And when I learned about complexity theory, I thought, oh, this is how a biological material thing could give rise to the mind. Because how is it that an ant colony arises from the individual ant? It's kind of magical. We call this emergence, emergent properties. It's kind of magical how people walking down the city street who are all busy with whatever they're going to do in the course of their day manage to create these elegant flows of people passing. We're not bumping into each other. We're not tripping. And yet we're organizing ourselves. How does that happen? It's almost like magic. So it's easy to imagine that mind is an emergent property of the complex structure of the brain. The problem is something called the hard problem of consciousness, classically.
When it's the hard problem of consciousness, but it's also, that phrase is the hard problem of science. It's like like the materialist science just sort of, oh, well, this is a hard problem, but we're going to set it aside. We're just going to set it over here. So, but you and your colleagues, you're looking at it. You're saying hard science, the hard problem. We're looking right into the dragon's mouth of it.
Right. And so the hard problem that David Chalmers, the philosopher, coined the term, and what he meant is that we are aware of our own experiences. Yes, our eyes get red light that come in and hit the retina, and then you get a chemical reaction, which gets electrical signaling to go from the eye into the brain, and you see the red color of a rose. But that doesn't explain the experience of redness. And the fact is that while we've got all such great detail about how chemical, biological interactions with the world around us through our ears, our eyes, our tongues, our nose, even within the brain itself, map to experiences, none of them explain how you have the experience itself. So we're always having to talk about neural correlates of consciousness. Every big discovery about how the brain maps to vision or dreams or whatever that gets onto the front page of, let's say, the New York Times, it's a correlate. It doesn't say that it causes things. We simply know that they correlate with each other. The other possibility, well, if it isn't causing, what is it? Well, it may be that the correlation comes because mind exists beyond the brain, and the brain transduces that mind out there the way a radio transduces radio waves. We know that radio waves are infinite. The antenna picks them up and turns it into a sound signal that we perceive as sound. But you don't expect to open up when you hear a Beatles song. You don't expect to open up the radio and see the Beatles play.
Right.
So this is another possibility. So I thought, well, maybe the brain is a complex system that has consciousness in it. You know, maybe cells have consciousness. And so I did this for a while. This is panpsychism, that maybe the brain doesn't create consciousness, but there's consciousness in the universe in smaller structures like cells, or maybe within molecules, or maybe subatomic particles that have little elemental bits of consciousness that when you put them together in a brain, turn into our consciousness. But that doesn't get rid of the hard problem either. it just sort of pushes it downward. Well, how has a cell have an experience of something? And the other possibility is that consciousness is what comes first. And quantum physics points in that direction. All the founders of quantum physics, most of them, were firmly on board with this. Einstein was not. But it also comes from direct experience of the mind through meditation, such as you get in my experience, Buddhist meditations, Jewish mysticism. But, you know, every contemplative practice from any spiritual background leads to the same basic perceptions, which is that mind is what comes first. Max Planck, the father of quantum studies, said you can't get behind consciousness. It's an implication of quantum physics. Consciousness has to come first. It's the observation of an object by a subject that brings that object into existence. And if that's the case, if consciousness comes first, the question is, how does this material existence arise from that? And so I think this is in part what I'm trying to do with the complexity theory, and now in the form of this book, is the complexity theory is a way of bridging how a fundamental awareness or consciousness gives rise to a material existence. And I think it's fairly simple. So, which is kind of arrogant, I suppose. But, you know, so an ant colony is made up of ants. But if you look closely at an ant, the ant disappears. It's made of cells. Well, if you look at a cell up close and personal, the cell disappears. It's just molecules. And those are just self-organizing complex systems of atoms. And those are just self-organizing complex systems of subatomic particles. And it's not infinitely smaller things. What quantum physics tells us now very clearly is that there is a limit. And whatever the smallest things are, they might be particles or strings or fields or loops, but whatever the smallest things are, they emanate out of space-time. Space-time is not an empty vacuum. It is full of energy. And because of relativity, energy and mass are interchangeable. So out of this, the space-time energy field, you get mass popping up into existence and then fading away. And it's sort of simmering. And that's what we call the quantum foam.
Okay. I'm going to slow it down
just a
little bit because,
yeah.
Okay, first of all, consciousness is fundamental. You can't get around it, can't get above it or below it. Like you can get above and below anything that's material, but mm-hmm. not consciousness. So that's number one. Then there is the idea of wave and particle and the observer mm-hmm. and the subjective person who's the subject and object. I can't remember who it was, Eisenberg or someone, you know, there is a possibility that is there. And mm-hmm. that possibility does not change until it's observed and kind of...
Right. Yeah, so this is where quantum physics comes in and sticks the monkey wrench into the materialist universe. If you do an experiment to determine what light is, it'll look like waves. But if you design a different experiment, it looks like particles, what we call photons. So is light waves or is it particles? Well, it depends on the experiment. And the image I like to use is that classic thing where you have two faces looking at each other in silhouette, and the space between them looks like a vase. Well, is light waves or particles? Is this two faces or is it a vase? A complete description says that it is both the vase and the two faces. They are complementary to each other, but you can only see the faces or the vase, even though you know both are true. Where light is concerned, it is both waves and particles, but you can only see light as waves or light as particles. This is a complementarity. this turns out to be a universal principle. So, and this is what complexity theory in part makes vivid. Is the colony a thing or is it made up of ants?
Uh-huh.
Is my body a thing or is it made up of cells? Both are true. Is a cell a thing? Yes, a cell is a thing. I can show you under the microscope.
Uh-huh.
But a cell is also a phenomenon arising from molecules.
It's our perspective, right?
Right.
It has to do with from where we're looking.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So from, you know, in Buddhist terms, we would say if you're looking from the most fundamental view of reality, everything is one. This is the realm of the absolute. There's no separation. But if you look at it from the everyday scale, this is the world of the relative. And I'm me and you're you. And we're sitting on our little devices talking to each other. Which is it? Are we living things that live on planet Earth? Yes, of course, that's true. But it is equally true that because every atom of our body came from something we ate, drank, or breathed from the planet, that you can also view it as we are the planet that have self-organized its atoms to become these things that walk around the surface thinking they're separate. Both things are true. We are walking, talking Earth. We are an expression of planet Earth directly. At the same time, we are these beings studying the Earth. It's the same thing when you get to the quantum level. Are we beings that live in the universe? Yes, that's true. But at the same time, we are the universe that is expressing itself as us.
Yes, and I think you give an analogy in some of your talks about how if you look at the hand, it looks like, you know, four fingers and a thumb, and it looks like a hand. Mm-hmm. But from the perspective, let's say, of the molecular or the atomic perspective, you go down and down and down and down and down. And pretty soon, the hand is not separate from the air that's surrounding it, or that the earth. It just really blows my mind. It's wonderful. Yeah. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with this wonderful doctor of pathology and philosopher of complexity theory, Dr. Neil Theis, and he's the author of Notes on Complexity, A Scientific Theory of Connection, Consciousness, and Being. And if you want to know about his work, you can go to his website, neilthiesofficial.com. And he spells his last name T-H-E-I-S-E, neilthiesofficial.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Neil Theis, and we're talking about boundaries. And I just mentioned the idea of the hand as an example. So let's talk about boundaries, Neil. Do they really exist?
Well, they exist and they don't exist. And like everything, I think that's one of the implications of complexity theory. Every perspective is valid. and doesn't erase other perspectives, even if they seem contradictory. We have to learn to hold them, like those two faces in the vase image. So in terms of boundaries at the everyday scale, I stop where my skin stops, and you stop where your skin stops. And that's fairly straightforward.
So the Buddhists would call that the relative.
That's the realm of the relative. Now, at the cellular level, the fact is you're shedding the cells from the top of your skin all the time into the room around you. And in fact, we have bacteria on our bodies, the microbiome, without which we cannot live. We are only normal human beings by including 50% is now the current estimate of our cells are actually bacterial. So every time you touch a doorknob or shake hands or kiss someone on the cheek, bacteria are being left behind and exchanged. And so at the cellular level, where is your boundary? Basically, where you live. Your rooms, your residence, your house, your office, that's the boundary of your body. When you get down to the molecular level, well, easy example is we're constantly breathing in oxygen made by plants, and we're breathing out carbon dioxide, which is taken in from plants. So the boundary at the molecular level is at least the entire biomass of the planet, where plants and animals are exchanging molecules. At the atomic level, the boundary goes out still further. So the farther you go down in scale, the wider your boundaries get. At the atomic level, this is what I said about the Earth. Are we individual bounded, skin-bound creatures on the surface, or are we in fact the entire Earth that contains us within its boundaries because every atom from us comes from the Earth? When you get all the way down to the quantum level, we know that because of non-locality, this weird quantum effect, that an electron is both present in front of you if you were studying it, but the field of the electron extends out to the edges of the universe. So at the quantum level, at the smallest level, where are our boundaries? Our boundaries are the entire universe. There's nothing beyond us. Our boundary is the universe, and we are all contained within that. And so from the lowest perspective, we are in fact one living conscious universe with nothing separate from anything else. So which is it? Is it that we are all one in one unbounded universe, or are we separate people? What I would argue is that we are both. Both views are necessary. If you restrict yourself to one, you're missing half of what the world is. And to me, to some extent, what complexity theory teaches me is to remind myself, where are my boundaries? What view am I choosing to look from? Am I looking from the communal level and my boundaries are the people that are in my community? Or is it just me and my little bounded self? Or is it the cellular level, in which case I'm part of the entire biomass of the planet? Who am I becomes a question of how am I looking at myself?
Right, exactly. And I want to just bring in Neil for a moment, if we can, like where we are right now in culture, and it's a challenge right now. We've got climate change happening, you know, huge earthquakes, and the shelf in Antarctica is breaking off. I mean, species extinctions, I mean, all of these things that we're concerned about. And what I got from delving into your research is that we may not be so inconsequential, even though we're part of this, as you say, this whole big boundless source of energy and field of consciousness, but we each can choose to be that errant ant. We each can choose to kind of strike out to a new frontier, to add our personal creativity to the mix. And we don't know, like that idea of the flap of the butterfly's wing, mm-hmm. We don't know what impact that might make. And for somehow, Neil, this is what gave me some optimism Mm-hmm. About staying connected and staying engaged in somehow in this whole experiment of human endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, disasters happen. I talk a lot about in the book about mass extinction events, because part of what comes with having this quench disorder, this limited randomness in the system, which allows you to adapt, it also means inevitably the system will collapse. Given enough time, that's going to happen too. In order to be alive, you have to have the possibility of dying. And given enough time, every system collapses. So to me, the question isn't, you know, part of it is you look at complexity theory and you can start to figure out other ways that we can influence things to avoid the mass extinction that's coming. And yes, complexity points to ways we can do that. That's part of how we're trying to answer things like what's going on with climate these days. It comes through complexity theory analyses. But the other thing is that mass extinction events also happen. You know, I've lived through these. We've all just lived through COVID. That was a mass extinction event. I grew up as a gay man in New York City in the 1980s, and AIDS was a mass extinction event. I came from a community of Holocaust survivors. That was certainly a mass extinction event. And I saw how people could come through that and come through it with resiliency or be broken. I saw people who couldn't come through it, who died in the process. But I saw people who died well or people who did not die well, who died troubled and angry and upset. And what complexity in part does is it points to possible solutions, but it also to me points to, if you have a flexibility of awareness, if you're not always seeing it from your own little particular viewpoint, it opens you up to a sense of connection that is more important perhaps even than endurance. Maybe we won't survive. But what will we have lived like while we were here? Maybe we will survive, but do we survive with a sense of gratitude and joy because we're part of this extraordinary planet? I don't think, you know, we're going to have some terrible climate catastrophes. Sure, it looks like that may be what's on the way. But 10,000 years from now, every ecosystem on this planet is going to be as extraordinarily wondrous as every ecosystem now that we worry about losing. Will people be part of that? I suspect people are resilient and creative enough that they'll figure out a way to be part of it. There may be fewer of us. So all of these things are possible. And when I get pessimistic, I remind myself the two faces and the vase. It may go this way. It may go that way. The times of greatest, when everything is a bubble as it is today, that's also the time of greatest creativity, greatest creative potential, so that you don't know where the solutions come from. You know, and afterwards we look back and go, oh, that was obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
No, we don't know what's going to happen exactly. This afternoon. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, Neil, too, it's just suddenly occurring to me that I need not waste my time trying to enroll others in sharing my perception. That's a waste of time. But I need to invest in my own perception as deep and broad as I possibly can. Does that make sense?
Yeah. To me, you know, if you look at how complex systems work, the greater diversity of interaction, whether it's the ants or the people or the cells, the more robust and creative and diverse the interactions are, the more likely you're going to get an adaptive response. So it's not that my response is going to be correct. It's more about, let's put it all out there. I have no idea whether I'm the ant that's going to find the new food source. I might be, or maybe the influence I have on that ant over there makes them the ones who, I don't know. But you have to believe that if you are putting your stuff out there with a sense of connection and this flexibility of awareness, that things happen. We can trust that, in fact, things happen. creative things happen and the world changes and adapts. That's where the science here oddly turns into giving me hope in the way my spiritual practices do. I find that they're completely in consonance with each other in this way.
For sure. For sure. I love it. And I think that we, in our conversation, we brought it back around to that early part of your life where you grew up in a practicing Jewish family, and then you become a scientist, and now you've been able to share all this with us. I want to thank you so much, Neil, for being with us today. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's great getting the chance to share ideas like this with you and your audience.
Yes, absolutely. I've been speaking with Dr. Neil Theis. He is a pathologist, a medical doctor, a pathologist, and a scientist, and an explorer of complexity theory. And his book is Notes on Complexity, a Scientific Theory of Connection, Consciousness, and Being. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, neiltheisofficial.com. And he spells his name N-E-I-L, Neil Theis, T-H-E-I-S-E, Neil Theis. official.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3783.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Amster.
And I'm Jake Eagle. We're co-authors of The Power of Awe.
Next time on New Dimensions, we'll be talking about the benefits of awe in less than 1 minute per day.
Research shows that walking through a forest for just 15 minutes can lower symptoms of anxiety and depression and boost positive moods. What better way to welcome spring than by spending time among the trees? As a national nonprofit organization, Tree Canada works to improve the lives of Canadians by planting and nurturing trees in communities across the country. They support individuals, local groups, businesses, and municipalities to increase tree cover and help fight climate change. Join Tree Canada in growing better places to live by visiting treecanada.ca.
Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.